Today on Movie While Us, we talk about Kong, Skull Island, Beauty and the Beast, and T2 Trainspotting. It's time for Movie World Outside. This is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, D as well.
Movie World Outside is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hello.
Just bouncing off the walls here from a sugar overload caused by the delicious mango pies Yazdi's just served us here.
They're little things. They're not, well.
It's the one time where I'm happy that there are bits in my mouth that I can still suck on during the show. Right, you're like, ooh, these nice little treat. Ooh, there's a bit there.
Trader Joe's.
Trader Joe's, thank God for them.
They're these little mango pies. We ate them all. I would have maybe taken a picture to post on Instagram. Gone. But
yeah, there's an empty plate.
They didn't last that long.
They're very mango-y.
They are, yeah. He always finds the best things in Trader Joe's. Things.
I do. I spend.
This is really the reason that we come round to record at Yazdi's house, because we get fed.
I kind of want to give Yazdi some money and say, Yazdi, can you go and do our shopping? Because I'm so skimpy on stuff like that.
Wait, no, right, you're Joe? Blinkered, right?
I'm blinkered, yeah.
Rashmi goes into the supermarket.
And buys the same thing every week.
Well, she goes in with purpose. She has her list. She shops her list. She leaves.
Yeah.
Like when I at least when I go with her, I slow her down because I end up spending 5 hours choosing breakfast cereal.
Yeah.
And that gives her plenty of time to peruse other goodie items. But yeah, you just zip around.
I zip around.
With purpose.
Yes. I'm like the FedEx truck.
Okay. Whereas Yazdi, I think it sounds like you take recreational time in the grocery store.
I linger. Sure, you more than linger.
I linger, yes. But there are a few, like, I always get, this is maybe too much information, I always get the orange cranberry scones, I always get the almond pastry, and those are good things to have with breakfast in the morning.
They are.
And, you know, then whatever else is there.
Yeah. Do you always try the thing that they're serving?
No.
Really?
I always feel awkward stepping up and saying, give me your free stuff.
I have no shame.
You have no shame.
I'll go for seconds. Nice, but I don't think I'll buy one.
I do buy some of the stuff.
But it just feels like they're not offering it. You have to go and ask for it.
That's true.
So it just feels
like. So go and ask, right?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Costco's great like that.
Costco offers
on a weekend.
You, yeah.
And not just that, but they throw food at you. I can go to Costco hungry, not spend a penny, and come
make
out
a whole
full.
Meal.
No,
yeah.
That's not true. Not spend a penny, Joe.
Well, this
is, there's never been a time when you can go in Costco and not spend money.
Not spend money on the samples.
Correct.
Right.
But yeah, then I end up coming home with like $500 worth of stuff in my cart that
it's
I've tried.
Ridiculous. The things
anyhow,
we do.
Mango pies
and shopping wallahs. So
Trader Joe's.
All right, we should probably get to it because we do have three movies
to talk about.
Yes, three, and they're all interestingly sequels or pre-sold franchises, as Hollywood likes to refer to them. Yeah,
reboots,
Kong.
Yeah.
Is clearly a follow-on from the various Kong movies that we've had over the year. Trainspotting.
T2 Trainspotting.
I was just getting there. T2 Trainspotting is a sequel to the 90s movie Trainspotting, and then we have Beauty and the Beast, which is a remake of a previous Disney franchise.
Live action.
It is that time of again. Hollywood seems to be bereft of fresh ideas here, but there seem to be the ones that get all the attention. And let's face it, all of us were interested in these movies from the moment they were mentioned, so that's why they do it. But let's find out if they were worth anyone's time. Where should we start?
Kong.
Okay.
So Kong Skull Island is directed by Jordan Voight Roberts. And according to the IMDb description, which is appropriately terse, it says a team of scientists explore an uncharted island in the Pacific, venturing into the domain of the mighty Kong, and must fight to escape a primal Eden. And the story, the only other thing I want to note is the story is set during the early to mid 70s. And the writing credits for the movie is Dan Gilroy, who we know, he himself is a very accomplished director, Max Borenstein and Derek Connolly, based on an original story by John Gattens. And the movie's cast is rounded up by Tom Hiddleston, Samuel L. Jackson, Brie Larson, who we all love, John C. Reilly, John Goodman, and John Ortiz. There's a lot of Johns here.
Yeah.
And Toby Cabillo is here as well. And this is what, I don't know, I should have read up on this, but must be at least the 8th or 9th or 10th or 12th mm-hmm. Kong movie that Hollywood has taken on. The last one was, I think, the one that Peter Jackson famously made.
2005.
So yeah, it's actually the 8th.
There you go. So it's 11 years after Jackson's venture in this territory, and here we have a new Kong movie. So what do you guys think about it?
So Skull Island, the movie, is supposedly a place where myth and science meet. But for me, this is more like Jurassic Park meets Godzilla, with a little bit of Sinbad from the 70s thrown in. Without any intrigue or reason as to why this movie is made, this makes no sense to me. I found this boring and dull, with too many jumpy moments that try to make up for the lack of any story. What a waste of time and money.
Joe? Be contrary, be contrary.
I am. Isn't this what we want in a monster movie? I mean, really? This is loud, it's big, it's bombastic. You know, so many of the Kong movies that we've seen in the past have this kind of, you know, slow reveal of the beast over time, and they build it. You know, here he's right there on screen, you know, having at it from the first time we see him. He's huge, he's fearsome, he's godlike. And, you know, this to me is, you know, there's a sense of fun behind the way that this movie was made. There was no attempt to you know, be overly heavy or preachy. I think they do take on some kind of satirical notes here and there, but you know, this was a monster movie first and foremost. You know, Kong is big and he's badass, and the monsters and the other creatures on Skull Island are as absolutely miserable and frightening as you expect them to be. So you know, it sets out to do one thing, which is be a terrific monster movie, and I think it does. It achieves it. It ends up being a big, bombastic, loud, crazy monster movie. I enjoyed it.
Come on, adjudicate.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot more than I expected to as well. And I just think it's a good creature feature. It really is. And it's not just Kong, but I was amazed at how all the other creatures on this island were perceived and designed, and how vicious and ruthless and just scary they were. I mean, I knew I was watching, I mean, let's face it. Okay, all Kong movies are B movies, right? Yes. They're all creature movies are B movies. But for a B movie, they were pretty scary. And for a B movie, I mean, I think there's no accident that the movie kind of, you know, has a lot of Apocalypse Now. I mean, the lead character's name is Conrad, and so he's referring to, you know, there's allusions to Heart of Darkness. So there is a lot of, you know, and it's based during the Vietnam War era, and Kong is always, represented politically, all kinds of things, you know, the things we don't like about ourselves, anything that's different, etc. But not even to get into the politics, I think it's pretty well grounded, but once the helicopters arrive on Skull Island, it's like the Towering Inferno, or it's like, you know, Poseidon Adventure. It's just a good schlocky B-movie. And, you know, it's hard to make a good schlocky B-movie. And it's I enjoyed it. I wasn't bored. And I liked how Kong himself was kind of developed. And it seems like, you know, he's unusually large, mm-hmm. Which, you know, you realize later on that it's just a setup to, you know, future movies where he's in one of them, he's going to take on Godzilla. So he has to be Godzilla size at least. And I do, I, until you mentioned it, I didn't realize that I think the Godzilla movie, which was made last year, we saw Godzilla like in the last half hour of the movie, if that. So there was a lot of, you know, awaiting and waiting. Whereas in this one, you see Kong like in the first 5 or 10 minutes of the movie, and then he's there the whole time.
Yeah, and he's awesome.
Yeah.
Right. And so both of you have spoken extensively about the monsters, but what's the point of the movie? Like, why do a remake now? I don't get it. Like, what happened in this movie, right? So yeah, great monsters, and they were scary, and I like the fact that, you know, things are coming out of the water and they're not what you expect, and this is how evolution has occurred on this little island in, you know, the middle of nowhere. But what's the point of the movie? What happened in the movie?
Why does it have to have a point? I mean, you know, we get constant Batman movies, we get constant superhero movies, we get constant monster movies, and somebody took a look at this franchise, and it was interesting. I saw a little clip of an interview with the director here, and you know, the studio was thinking, well, let's bring back Kong as a big full on monster movie. They originally were going to set it in the 1930s. And the director came to them with this idea of setting it in the 70s so that we can have helicopters, so that we can have napalm, so that we can have all these kind of big explosion, fiery stuff. And the studio went for it. So, you know, what's the point? Well, you know, there isn't, I guess, a depth of story to be told here, but there is definitely the opportunity for a big-ass monster movie to be made.
Okay, since you asked for it, Godzilla, my understanding, is always meant to represent Japan's terror of the nuclear holocaust.
Right.
Right, so it's this big thing which can show up at any minute and destroy cities, which is essentially what, you know, happened in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So it was some physical representation of something evil and out of control which can completely destroy the world. And I think Kong, in a way, also represents, you know, the ultimate boogeyman. He's you know, this large ape-like creature which represents where we came from, but the darkness is still within him. And so he seems to be the ultimate monster in that fashion. And all Kong movies always struggle with this idea of, is he really this deep, dark, evil being which needs to be destroyed, or is he more human than ape who needs our help and who needs our sympathy? And, you know, so there's always been this kind of tug and push and pull. Now, like you before, this is the reason why I said it was, for me, it was surprisingly good, because I was very annoyed. I'm like, we don't need to keep rolling out a new Kong movie every 10 years, just as we are rolling out a new Spider-Man movie every 10 years with a new actor. It's ridiculous. You know, we just keep rebooting and rebooting. What is there to bring to the show? But I really liked how it's been done here with the whole 70s era. There's a lot of 70s music here. There's a lot of very quick cuts. There's some weird angles that are used in the movie, and there's a lot of close-ups. A lot of close-ups.
Yes.
So there's somebody's trying something stylistically, and I also like that the female lead here is kind of less... You know,
She's not a damsel.
And, you know, there, one part about the whole Kong, you know, mythology has always been this creepiness, because Kong, in all the original movies, wanted to see the female lead naked. I mean, the original 1933 Kong, you know, strips her and puts her under the waterfall. So there was this weird sexual thing, you know, between Kong and this female lead. And the movie completely dispenses with that year.
Right.
And so...
Well, it alludes to the fact that it's coming. At some point.
But I don't see Kong's gaze to her as ever being sexual. He almost sees her as somebody who understands him. Needs protection.
Mm.
So I think that seemed kind of good. And I really, really dug the production design here.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I mean, it's just the world they've created is magnificent.
They had...
So I agree with you, purposeless, but... Oh.
They had a hell of a CG budget and they spent the hell out of it. And it shows in every frame. I mean, you know... As ridiculous as the locomotion of the main kind of dragon monster is, I believed every second of its movement and its viciousness. It was very Jurassic Park in that, you know, Velociraptor-like. But the way that thing moves around, when you look at the... It has, you know, two arms and this tail and this...
Scary.
But God, is that thing vicious. Frightening. And it moves, you know, so... Just the look and feel of the movie with its explosions is terrific. And I think I'm glad that they didn't do a remake of the classic 1930s, 1920s, whatever it was, Kong movie, where they bring him to New York to destroy the city. And, you know, they fight him on his own turf here. I like some of the messages that the movie touches on, you know, the environmental balance, you know, how the destructive nature of man. You know, how Kong is very much a protector of the island. And so there's these little messages in there. They're not, it doesn't go too far with them. You know, it doesn't get heavy with them. It doesn't get preachy with them. But, you know, there's still some nice moments there to give us a little bit more than just, you know, wanton destruction.
I'm just shaking my head because I just really, I mean, again, visually very nice to look at. I agree. Kong was well realized. But you know, I was kind of, I didn't care about anyone. In fact, I wish they'd all got eaten so we wouldn't end up with a sequel. I just don't understand it. I'm kind of just scratching my head and I acknowledge all the things you're saying, Yazdi, but none of those things came to fruition in this movie. None of that heart or emotion or metaphor or, you know, none of that. I saw none of that.
I think it's going to show up on one of those, you know, TBS movies for guys type thing. I think this is very much one of those, you know what I mean? It's big and it's loud and it's brash and it's full of explosions and there's, you know, machine guns and there's, you know, this 70s rock soundtrack. I mean, you know, it's...
This was basically two shakes away from being a Michael Bay Transformers movie to me.
It was far more intelligent than that.
I knew that would wind you both
up. Far better constructed. Far better constructed.
Oh, can we stop talking about it now?
All right.
As I look and I see there is Godzilla versus Kong coming in 2020.
So tell us what you think, Rashmi, of this one.
What a waste of money. I just really can't recommend anyone go and see this movie until it comes out in the back of an airplane. And even then, if there's something better on, watch that. Ugh, 4 out of 10.
Yes, D. Put it right.
It's way better than it needed to be. It's way, way, way better than it needed to be. And if, you know, if you're a creature feature, maniac, and I'm slowly getting to be that, it delivers. I think it really delivers. I think Roger Ebert always used to say it's not what a movie's about, it's how it is about what it is about. And I really liked how it is a Kong movie. And I liked the care with which it's been constructed. And I really like Brie Larson, who I would have never thought as an action heroine. Not that she gets to do much action, but she's kind of the female lead in this. She did a pretty good job. I thought she was
great.
She was likable and yet not a shriveling violet. And, you know, I liked her.
But she didn't get to do much. Stop complaining and let you have score.
And then, you know, again, I don't want to give things away, but, you know, most Kong movies have a particular conclusion, and there's that famous line, you know, it was beauty which killed the beast. And you don't get this line here by virtue of how the movie ends. So that kind of seemed a little bit shortchanged. But be that as it may, visually I was dazzled. I love the creatures on those islands. I wouldn't mind watching, you know, yeah, Kong versus Godzilla. But so I give it a 7.5 out of 10, which I'm going to back down to 7.
Joe.
And for me, this is loud. It's bombastic. There's plenty of awesomeness everywhere. I mean, it's what I want from this kind of movie. And here's what I'll say is, I'm looking at the poster right now on the Rotten Tomatoes site, and there's this helicopters and soldiers walking towards a big, huge silhouette of Kong backlit by the sun on the horizon. And if that doesn't look awesome to you, then don't go see this movie. If, like me, you get goosebumps from that kind of imagery, then this is for you. And this is basically what I'll say. 8 out of 10, it's great. It's what I wanted it to be. I feel like the end is a little bit of a setup for a sequel, which is a little bit frustrating because I think the movie could have played it a little straighter and gone a little deeper had it not had to do that. But when you spend this kind of money, you want it to pay off with, you know, Kong 2 and Kong 3. And I, for one, I'm looking forward to both.
Yeah. And, you know, it's weird. I mean, I wouldn't have thought it because I think so highly of Peter Jackson, but I think this might be better than that movie.
Oh, his version was awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, his version was terrible.
His version was awful. Yeah, he was trying to... Naomi Watts
and Adrian Brody and, yeah.
But this wasn't much better.
His version was trying to be too respectful to the Kong legend and make it more of a, you know, a deeper myth than it really is. I mean, you know, Kong's effectively a big monkey. You know, let him go smash things up. That's what we want to see. Not this yeah, like weird sexual predator that right, he has always been portrayed to be. All right. Okay. Move on. Movie number 2 then. What should we talk about? We have
Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
Beauty and the Beast.
Yes,
that was quite good. That was quite good.
That was soulful. I thought we had Angela Lansbury in here for a minute.
Yeah, I was. I was possessed by Angela Lansbury.
Channeling Angela Lansbury. Yes. Wow.
Mrs. Potts is next to me, clearly.
He did make us tea as well.
He did, yes.
All I need is a little chip.
Okay, I guess I'm down to introduce this one, but it really needs no introduction. It's effectively, it's a part of what Disney's doing at the moment seems to be live action remakes of cartoons of the past. So we've had Cinderella, we had Jungle and the Jungle Book last year. Beauty and the Beast is the latest one to get the cartoon to live action treatment. This movie here is essentially a retelling of that old classic. I say old classic, it's 20 years old. It's obviously based on a much older fairy tale. It's directed by Bill Condon and stars Emma Watson as Belle, Kevin Kline as her father, Maurice. We have Dan Stevens as Beast, Josh Gad as LeFou, Luke Evans as Gaston, Ewan McGregor as Lumiere, and many, many more. It's a really well cast. Well,
and Emma Thompson as Mrs. Potts.
And Emma, that's right. So Stanley Tucci's cadenza, if you want to go there. But we have a huge cast. It's clearly had a lot of money spent on it. I had some opinions going into this one.
I was going to say, do you want to reveal what you said before the movie started? Do it now.
Sure. So as we sat down, I ended up watching the trailer of this when it was released last year. I think sometime around October, and I couldn't help but think that Emma Watson wouldn't have been my choice for Belle. Certainly, the trailer seemed to think that was not quite the right direction to go, but. Let's talk about the movie first, and so let me find out what you guys thought of it, and I'll talk a little bit more about Emma Watson later.
Okay, so Beauty and the Beast is one of the first movies that reignited my love for Disney as an adult, and this one is near and dear to my heart. So I was worried about what they would do in a live-action version of this movie, and I kept thinking, why? You know, why are we getting all of these live-action movies of beautiful animations that were kind of reboots at that time anyway? And having seen it, I'm still thinking, why? Like, why did they bother? But I loved this and I was not disappointed.
Okay. Yeah, I think I find it, you know, just to comment on, I find it troubling that they're kind of going back and kind of doing live action versions of everything. They did Jungle Book beautifully. We can talk about how they did Beauty and the Beast, and I just heard they're going to do a live action version of The Lion King, which
and
makes
Mulan.
That's right, yeah.
How can you make a live action version of Lion King? They're going to have real lions talking to each other?
Yes.
I think they'll do
like
it's well, Jon Favreau's at the helm. He did last year's Jungle Book, so I'm assuming that they'll use similar.
Okay.
Similar
and Mulan, but, which is also one of my favorites, right, this company has a live action.
But so David Pinson, he writes about cinema in San Diego. I read his review and I kind of really agree with him because this movie kind of makes me schizophrenic. A part of me is really annoyed that if you're going to take on a classic like that, it's almost it has too much fidelity to the original material. It's like just some of the scenes are like scene by scene reproductions, yes, of the original one. So it almost seems pointless, other than, you know, it's been, 25 years since the original came out, so maybe a new generation of people will see it and they won't realize it. So I'm really hung up on why. But at the same time, I have to admit that the movie has moments of magic. It does. I just wish those moments of magic had been sustained. So it was all very up and down and up and down and up and down for me. And by the way, I do have a very strong opinion on whether Emma Watson is the right Belle, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, I mean, let's start with the movie. So, I mean, it wasn't completely devoid of charm, but I think it paled in comparison to the cartoon on which it's based. I mean, I think the biggest frustration for me is that unlike Jungle Book, which took a lot of artistic and creative mm-hmm. license with the source material, it told the same story, but with a completely different script and screenplay and different moments. Here, we effectively had, like you said, Yazdi, a shot-for-shot remake, except instead of, you know, hand-drawn animation, it's done with live action and actors. And I think they shackled themselves a little bit by making that decision, because I think they were almost trying to be too respectful to the source. But I think you can tell this story in many, many ways that would work better with a live action scenario than the way that they did here, which was, you know, the CG-esque version of the cartoon version with some live actors in the mix. So, you know, I just kept thinking green screen and costumes all the way through, and I didn't buy into the world. I think also the songs didn't work quite as well. You know, the animation has a certain punchiness that the movie lacked, especially when you think about a song like the opening scene, the Provincial Life.
Which we've been singing all week.
Which we have, but there are so many wonderful little, you know, side comments there that fall a little flat with the live action. Whereas in the cartoon, you have these, you know, larger than life, you know, characters kind of bellowing comments from the sidelines. It didn't quite work as well, but
I mean, I literally had goosebumps when it started, and the smile on my face didn't abandon my face the entire way through. I mean, I think I was just so happy that it wasn't crappy, right? I mean,
it wasn't crappy.
I think it's well acted. I think it's cast very well. I think it has great effects. I love the songs. And I think Emma Watson was great as Belle.
All right, let's go there.
Let's go there.
Yes, Dee.
No. I mean, I think Emma Watson is badass. I mean, there's few actors, maybe other than George Clooney, who I admire more as human beings than, you know, for what Emma Watson's doing. Is she's super smart and she's gone to Harvard. And anyway, she's a good actor. But somehow I did not buy her interaction with the Beast. She seemed closed off. And I know her character is supposed to be closed off initially because she's very reserved and bookish and so forth. But I never saw her kind of, you know, the rose is the analogy. I never saw her kind of open up to the Beast. It just felt like she was going through the motions. Like, I remember when I was watching the animated movie when Belle comes down the stairs for, you know, the title song.
In the dress.
You know, in the yellow dress. I could feel the connection between Belle and Beast.
Oh, and you didn't get that here.
Which is sad. Yeah. But so I think... maybe somebody a little bit more spunkier. I don't know who would be a better, you know, somebody with a little bit more fire under her belly.
Yeah, that was my main issue with the movie too, which is, you know, Belle is not just a beautiful character. Belle has, you know, intelligence, eccentricity, and inner strength. And
why are you looking at me when you say that?
Because that's you.
I'll let you answer that one for yourself.
And she's fearless, right?
Yeah, Emma Watson lacked any of the, you know, intelligence, eccentricity, inner strength of Belle, I think. I'm not sure who I would cast in this role too, but Emma Watson simply wasn't sassy enough and strong enough.
Spunky.
And like you, yesterday, I didn't buy the fact that she makes this turn, right? That's the whole point of Beauty and the Beast. It's all about, you know, superficial beauty, you know, giving way to kind of inner beauty. She learns to love the Beast for the person that he is and not the way that he looks, despite his, you know, original... You know, this is the fairy tale aspect of it. And like you, Esty, in the cartoon, you see that change. Over time, she starts looking at him differently. She starts, you know, appreciating the little gestures that he makes, even though they're, you know, they're beastly. And, you know, and over time, he's learning to behave. I didn't see that journey here.
Really?
Yeah, so ultimately they kind of, you know, they hate each other and then they love each other. And...
No, I don't think that was the case, though. There was a song that it happened over.
Okay, so, yeah, okay, that's a thing, you know. That's the song. There's something there that wasn't there before.
Yeah.
I didn't get that transition in this movie in the way that I did with the cartoon. So it falls a little flat. It's not a horrible movie. It's gorgeous to look at. Just a little disappointing overall.
So I think for me, two things really jump out to me. I mean, and I know you guys probably criticized this at the beginning, which was I liked that they managed to replicate the animation without making it awful. And most impressive to me was the scale of the movie. It was stunning to look at. The cinematography was amazing. I mean, just the panning up of the castle, the snow, the forest, the woodlands, the hills. I mean, to me, it was absolutely beautiful to look at. And I absolutely disagree with you about Emma Watson. I mean, I think she was great. And like you said, I mean, if I think about who's more sassy, someone like Belle Powley, she's sassy. But then she's too sassy, and I can't imagine that she would be...
Yeah. I wouldn't pick Belle Powley.
No, right. Well, then you think of like Emma Stone. No, she can't sing.
I think she could go there, though. She could get there.
So Emma Watson famously rejected the La La Land. It was offered to her first, the La La Land part.
Oh, really?
And she took on Beauty and the Beast. And Emma Stone won an Oscar for La La Land. Just all saying right. That. I'm just going to put it there.
Yeah, but who got the bigger paycheck?
Oh, yeah, probably.
I think Disney might have a little deeper pocket.
I mean, what did you think of the 3D? We saw this one in 3D.
Oh, it was 3D? Oh.
Yeah.
It was good, then.
Clearly. clearly you liked it.
You know, I'm kind of over 3D, so unless the movie is remarkable in some aspect, I feel it can be something of a cash grab. You know, I don't know that it's additive in any way. I didn't think it was horrible. I didn't find myself being distracted by it, but I don't feel like the movie was better for it. And you know, it's the 2D can be 3D. As famously in this movie, in the cartoon version, they have the ballroom, which was generated CG for the very first time, which, you know, had this swooping camera motion that had never been done before in animation because it's too hard to animate the background that way. This movie had that, and that felt very three-dimensional. So, you know, why pay the extra $5 for glasses?
I agree.
You don't need it. Especially if you're taking a busload of kids.
Ones, I was thinking it was a little bit dark, maybe for little ones at times. But
and this is the cartoon.
Yeah, the wolves. The wolves are pretty nasty.
Yeah, though I think they're more frightening in the cartoon rendering because they're meaner, and also Beast is very frightening when you meet him in the cartoon.
Yes,
he's very grumpy and fearsomely so.
The other thing which kind of surprised me is at least in the Be Our Guest number, it all seemed like animation. Like
it was great.
Really, I felt like what's the difference between this and the original one? It seemed too CGI. I feel like such a, I don't know,
grump, humbug,
like a Scrooge to complain about it. But there's nothing wrong with it. That's for sure.
I mean, I loved Luke Evans as Gaston, and I loved the sidekick, LeFou. Josh Gad as LeFou was great. I mean, I thought, you know, Dan Stevens was good as the Beast.
Was good.
They were all good. They were all good.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap this up.
Okay, Joe, you go first. You go first.
Okay.
Be my guest.
I wished they hadn't been as respectful to the original material being the cartoon. And I wish I'd kind of gone the Jungle Book route, maybe referring back to the fairy tale, telling this story the same way, same beat, but just with more up-to-date kind of thinking. I don't think it adds anything to the cartoon. If a gun was placed to my head, I would say watch the cartoon first over this. I would not say that about Jungle Book. I would say that watch them both on their own merit. They both are very beautiful movies and have completely different takes on a very similar story. So I wish I'd done that here. I'm going to be real stingy on this and give it a 6 out of 10. I do think it's a little better than that, but I can't get over my disappointment with Emma Watson and the overall approach taken to this movie. I don't want to support Disney in doing more of these frame-by-frame remakes.
Yes, Steve.
6 out of 10 for me as well. It could have been...
Like your report card.
Yes. Could be better, yes. Can do better. Can do better, yes. 6 out of 10.
7 out of 10 for me. This is beautiful to watch and not terribly acted. I think if you're a fan of the movie, go watch this. If only to play the music and sing the songs around your house for the following week, which is what will happen.
Yeah, the songs are nicely done. I'll give them that, I think. Yeah. And they're great
and
songs.
And they've added some new ones too.
Yes.
There's one that the Beast sings at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's one that Belle sings in the tower after she's locked up. So, yeah, and I wonder if any of this came from the stage play. I mean, you know, is this the film of the play of the film? Maybe it is, because I don't remember the stage play.
And it's been a while since I saw the animated movie, but was that whole thing there at the start?
No.
About how that's new too,
that's
as well.
No, that's new, yeah. It's a much condensed version of how the Beast becomes the Beast.
Right, yeah.
In the animation, where it's a bit more expanded here.
So it's more expanded.
It's done very Lord of the Rings-like in the cartoon, where, you know, there's a kind of a narrator and some silhouettes. And here, you're right, it shows that.
More detail,
Okay, movie number 3 then is another sequel / remake / follow-up, T2 Trainspotting.
So again, I'm going to be brief with this. After 20 years abroad, Mark Renton returns to Scotland and reunites with his old friends, Sick Boy Spud and Begbie. This is directed again by Danny Boyle, and it's written by John Hodge, based on the novels by Irvine Welsh, and stars Ewan McGregor, Ewan Bremner, Johnny Lee Miller, and Robert Carlyle, amongst others, with many of the old faces showing up. So Yazdi, why don't you start us off today?
So, you know, I remember seeing the first Trainspotting and I didn't understand like half of it. So, I mean, I enjoyed it. It just seemed like one of those movies which is trying to poke a stake into your eyes saying, I'm going to offend you. You know, it just, and I kind of admire that a movie is going out of its way to kind of get you out of your comfort zone. So I'd appreciated it more along those lines. I was never a big fan, certainly, of those characters, mostly because I didn't know what they were saying half the time.
Okay, so, the new laddie.
Boom! Blue, or I don't know what they were saying, but anyway, and yeah, there was a lot of what were they saying?
We're offending everybody in Scotland.
Yeah, offending the Scottish, but anyway, so this movie to me may not hold as much import as it might to other people, and I understand that the movie holds quite a cult ranking amongst, you know, its admirers. So, you know, from that perspective, I did enjoy it. I think Danny Boyle is incapable of making a movie which is not stylistically evolved. But it felt like it was just a retread. It was like it kind of went and met these four characters again and what was going on with their life. And it seemed more, and this is where they are now, kind of, rather than having a whole new setup and a heist and a story or any of that built. So, I don't know, maybe the plot could have been better, but I did not hate this movie. I enjoyed it. I don't think it's exceptional.
Joe?
The original Trainspotting was such a kind of landmark piece of British cinema. I think, you know, it put Danny Boyle on the map as a director to pay attention to. And I remember my initial reaction to hearing that there was going to be a sequel to this was kind of disappointment, because I didn't think this needed any kind of a sequel. But then I thought, well, they must have a story that needs to be told, and that this will be, you know, why are we going back to these characters after all this time? Somebody's come up with a story that has to be told about the characters. And this was almost that story. It wasn't quite what I wanted it to be. I think it's Boyle. So I'm always going to enjoy something that Danny Boyle does. I mean, even that, you know, horrendous Olympic opening ceremony that he was responsible for very enjoyable to watch. But, you know, this is a movie is nothing like as pivotal as the original in terms of, you know, bringing us something new. It does the urban squalor of Glasgow really well, and it's kind of nice hanging out with these guys again. Mm-hmm. But nothing remarkable at all.
Yeah, Joe, you always say this, any sequel has to be twice as good to be half as better. Is this better? Of course it's not. But will you feel nostalgic as hell and be entertained if being entertained is feeling sick to the pit of your stomach for what's going to happen? Then heck yes. If you don't watch if you didn't watch or love the original, then don't go watch this. But if you did love it, which I did, then, you know, rush, run, heck, speed your way to another dose of Rentman and Spud and Begbie and Sick Boy. Because for me, this is Manhood or Before Midnight. And just for that reason, I think it's totally worth a watch.
Do you mean Boyhood?
Yeah, but okay, I'm saying it's Manhood, right? It's because they've kind of grown up now, and it's their Manhood, right? So
I see what you did there.
I see what I did. Okay. Look, I think the main thing when I saw it was it's not crappy. I was really relieved that it wasn't crappy, because I was really worried that it was going to be crappy. Because like you, Joe, I think that Trainspotting was so pivotal. We lived in the UK when we saw the original.
It was an absolute revelation. I hadn't seen anything like it.
Right? And it was fantastic because it had a really biting political commentary. And so I think the thing that is lacking here is there isn't enough of that political commentary. When it comes, it's genius. Mm-hmm. In true Danny Boyle style, it's kinetic and it's hard hitting and it really makes you sit up. But it comes halfway through the movie for most of it. And I just wish there was more of that biting political commentary.
And even just the observations. I mean, you know, sure, we can't ever have another scene about what it's like to withdraw from heroin, right? That's been done. It's done brilliantly. And the movie doesn't call for it, but those kind of moments are what made Trainspotting such a visceral, intensely violent experience as a movie to watch. I mean, I remember as a moviegoer being absolutely exhausted by it and thrilled at the same time. And here, this is more of, you know, this is kind of like, yeah, here's where they are now. Yes, this is a good way of putting it, because there wasn't a story fighting out to be told. There weren't those kind of experiences to have. And the movie does get fun in the end. It gets quite violent and builds tension in the way that only Boyle can seem to do on screen. But it's a little disappointing overall, in the sense of, and that's not to say I didn't enjoy it, it's just it didn't feel like, it felt like this was a 20-year anniversary, so let's make a sequel, as opposed to this is the next evolution in the Trainspotting story.
But what would the evolution be? I mean, these are now, people in their 40s, right? I mean, so I think I had the same thought. And I think, those of us who were in our 20s when we watched the original were the same age as these characters. And no, so absolutely. Now when we're looking back, or if someone comes to look at us who knew us when we were those ages, life changes. And so I think what we're seeing is the transition of boyhood to manhood for these four characters.
Sure.
And I think that, of course, it wasn't going to be as good as the original, but I don't think it disappoints in where you expect that these people are going to be. Like, where else are 46-year-olds, 47-year-olds going to be?
So why tell the story? I mean, there is a reason for revisiting these characters, right? I mean, you could make a fresh movie about new characters and tell a different story. Why make this one?
Because these were really interesting characters, and didn't you want to see where someone who stole £16,000 would end up with, and the people who he stole from and how their lives ended up, and would heroin or drug taking follow those people all their lives, or would they have some pivotal moment in their life? Don't you think that's interesting within itself?
Exactly, but we didn't get any of that.
I think we did.
Okay. Therein lies the difference in opinion, because I think what we got was, you know, a follow-up of, yeah, here's where they are now, but it didn't excite me in any meaningful way. I mean, I think, again, a sequel of a movie like this has to be... The Before series is a really great example of where does their relationship go, and then they revisit them 10 years later, and they're in this completely different place. And it's a story, it's a next chapter, it's the story that has to be told. This, for me, didn't feel like it was jumping off the script as a film that had to be made. And that's just maybe an opinion, maybe it didn't work as well for me as it did for others. Not to say it's crap, because it's really nice hanging out with these guys again. It really is. It's so much fun. You remember what you felt for them and how seared these characters are on your brain. I mean, it's 20 years ago we saw this movie, and I remember almost every moment of it.
I just saw it more as a philosophical examination of, you know, the consequences of betrayal. So, you know, the first movie ended with this grand betrayal. And, you know, all these years later, the value of that money has changed in the last 25 years.
Yes.
But that deep, deep, deep wellness of regret and anger hasn't, you know, faded even a notch.
It's worse
and it's brewing. And so it kind of became unintentionally philosophical about how we carry the wounds of our parents, if you will. In this case, the wounds of our childhood into our adulthood, and how it nearly destroys all of them, because they can't get past the first story, the original story. They're still somehow...
Yeah, the chickens have come home to roost, and I think they've all paid a price for the decisions that they made as youths. I mean, I think, you know.
Yeah.
And to say that, I mean, it is ostensibly a movie about aging and looking back on life. And, you know, I think this has been said in another review that I heard of the movie, but I get that, right? It's not the exciting next chapter that I was hoping for.
Yeah.
Let's wind this one up then. So, Yazdi, you go first.
A 6 out of 10 for me. It's not a bad movie by any means. It's visually very well, and how can it not be? It's made by Danny Boyle, and it's kind of good to see these four characters kind of, you know, bounce off of each other. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Seven Psychopaths. Maybe it's because, you know, same part of the world. But yeah, 6 out of 10. I wouldn't ask anybody to rush out and go watch this in the theater, but if the original Trainspotting meant a lot to you, by all means do. Mm-hmm. And definitely if you don't get a chance in the theater, you should catch it with legal streaming services.
Joe?
I'm going to give it a very generous 8 because a 7 feels too stingy, and mm-hmm. I enjoyed the movie way more than it sounds like I did in the moment. I could watch a Danny Boyle washing machine commercial and it would be, you know, a good time at the movies. And you know, his visual style, the way that he, you know, just at the beginning where he's throwing up some of the words on screen to kind of help you tune into the Glasgow dialect that is so much a part of the movie's character.
Which is funny because he probably got a lot of complaints that nobody understood what they were saying. So he was kind of playing off of it.
I barely understood it. My mother lives like an hour away from where these guys live. So, you know, yes, it's tough in that regard, but it's a rip roaring good time. Again, it's kind of like spending time with your 20 something friends and then realizing that there's a reason that you didn't like them in the first place. You know, that's kind of, you know, how I felt. But you know, good solid fun, really a good movie to see if you were a fan of the original. Just go in with measured expectations, because this isn't as satisfying a tale to be told as the original was.
And how could it be? Because that was so brilliant. I mean, for me, I had a palpable sense of sickness in my stomach the entire way through. The tension created by what may happen and what could go wrong was just pitch perfect most of the time, almost like a horror movie for me. It's funny, it's relevant, and it's real. And it has this wonderful kinetic energy that runs through the movie the entire time. I think it has a great soundtrack, great innovative camera work, which we didn't even get to mm-hmm. talk about. For those of us who watched this in our 20s and we're now the same age as those characters, I think the genius of this movie is that it enables you to look back at your own life through these characters. A solid 8 out of 10.
Yeah. I forgot to mention, just to get this point in, but they did overcook the ending. I think, it goes to a kind of a level of volume that I was not, again, it's Boyle. He can't help himself. He adds and he adds and he augments and he builds and, you know, it all kind of goes pop, but that's fun. All right.
Lager. That's yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first half of my week was Celine Dion.
Why?
And then because of Beauty and the Beast.
Cause she did
and then,
the,
and yeah. then the second half, I couldn't stop listening to Born Slippy.
By Underworld, yeah, that was the iconic train spotting sound. If you remember mm-hmm. that from back in the day,
which makes a little appearance in the movie,
right? Yeah,
it was actually an updated soundtrack, apparently. So a lot of the soundtrack had been they basically took the songs and updated them. A lot of the artists agreed to update them.
Yeah, no, its texture was very, very in line with the original. All right. So that's it, I think, for this podcast. We've rambled on for 45 minutes here. So Kong, Beauty and the Beast, T2 Trainspotting, which we didn't talk about that, but it's called T2 because they didn't want to call it Trainspotting 2.
Correct.
Okay.
And T2 is better?
Well, anyway. I think it was a throwback to almost making fun of the Terminator movie.
Okay.
Which, when you think about the final scenes in the movie, there is perhaps a little bit of a homage. All right. Well, let us know what you think. Mail at movieworldhouse.com, twitter.com/movieworldhouse, facebook.com/movieworldhouse, instagram.com/movieworldhouse, everything/movieworldhouse. Reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. Until next podcast, it's too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.
What was it?
I don't know. Little caterpillar.
It came out of your pie.
No! I didn't say that! That came out of the oven. No!
That's funny.
I was like, where did it come from? That was a piece of rice.
Oh my god.
Did it come from my hair?
No.
God, that would be horrible.